Welcome to episode 14 of The Andrew Hansen Show. This episode is called Niche Authority Sites and the Future of Organic Search Marketing. This episode is about a business model that I'm working on at the moment that I think is going to be really profitable into the future. I figured you would be interested too. In the episode, we're going to hear why I think this business model is so great right now and will continue to be profitable into the future. I'm going to explain to you exactly what this specific brand of authority site is, because I think it's something different to what you might associate with the term at the moment. I'm going to show you what comprises that kind of site and how you can turn maybe an existing site you have into this kind of site if you're not working on it already. I'm going to show you some examples of this kind of authority site that already exists that I use and take information from regularly that I think you'll find interesting and valuable. And at the end, we'll talk a little bit about how you can build this kind of authority site if you're not already and profit from it going forward. I think you'll find this episode really valuable. I had fun recording it. I'll turn over to me again. It's a dumb thing to say. I'll see you soon. All right, so this is niche authority sites and why I think they're the future of organic search marketing. What I'm going to talk to you about in this podcast episode is a business model, really a variation, a kind of a business model that's related, very similar to the kind of business model you probably already know about, having found yourself here, this kind of content site, niche site, content-driven digital business. I'm going to talk to you about a set of ideas or ways of doing that I think if you can implement them, you're going to be well placed for the future with the possible, let's say likely coming changes in the internet and just a general direction that things are going. So the flow of this podcast, just so that you know and you can move through it easily if you want to, if you're short on time and kind of skipping through. The way I'm going to present this to you is first to talk about what I'm calling a niche authority site, because it's not simply an authority site, as you'll soon hear. I'm going to start by talking about what a niche authority site isn't, which is basically a problem that I think good niche authority sites, the kind I'm going to tell you about, can solve. Then we're going to talk about what a niche authority site is, break it down a little bit so you can understand how it operates, what its currency is, and why it's different to any other sort of authority site. I'm going to tell you about why I think it's a smart business and why it's going to be well-placed for the future, well-placed to be more profitable rather than less over time. I'm going to give you some examples of authority sites to look at. And lastly, we're going to talk about if you are wanting to integrate some of these ideas into your own sites, your own business, how you can go about doing that. Okay, let's get started. So the idea for this episode came when I was doing a search of my own and found myself frustrated. Basically, I was looking for, it was Alicia and my date night. We were looking for a restaurant in this new suburb that we're in at the moment to go out to. We wanted to go to a Chinese restaurant. We really love that Sichuan Chinese, really spicy one. So I'm looking for a Chinese restaurant in this area. And the experience of searching it was immediately frustrating. Basically, when I searched, it was some string like best Chinese restaurant in this suburb, okay? So the first 10 sites were sites almost entirely that I recognized because they were authoritative in the sense that the names were well known, they were kind of big and credible. So I had like TripAdvisor on the list. There was like not booking.com, but another one of these like big restaurant aggregators. It's a local one in Australia. You probably wouldn't know it. But then there was like what was the other ones coming up at the bottom? Anyway, it was basically this kind of site where it's like big multi-author sites. That's the other one. The other one, and this is common across a lot of niches, there was big sites where like a newspaper in Australia had published an article about one interesting Chinese restaurant in this area. Or sometimes even you'll see a big newspaper, an authoritative publication has published a piece on like top five Chinese restaurants in Melbourne, whatever it is, okay? The point is, the whole top 10 were all pretty much along that line. And I actually didn't even click through to any of them because I kind of just sensed something from the beginning of that search, which is at the heart of this problem. And it's the problem that While all these sites are big and authoritative and credible in the sense that they've accumulated a lot of knowledge together in one place, I didn't want to click onto TripAdvisor and read the reviews of 100 random people who I don't know about what they personally thought was the best Chinese restaurant in this area. Because I don't know those people. I don't trust any of those people. Well, I don't know those people. I can't know them. I'm not going to dig through their profile information to see how many reviews they've written or what their history is or what their background is. I don't know any of the people. I don't trust them. And I don't trust that they're going to have as much concern or care for the quality of this restaurant as I might have. It's an important thing. I don't go out on a date night every day of the week. I really care. I really want this to be a lovely meal. There's a lot, I say a lot, relatively speaking. It's not like world hunger or something. Like, there's a lot riding on this restaurant, but not that much, whatever. I just want that to be good. I want the right outcome there. And I don't trust any old random to give me a recommendation, even if it is the accumulated wisdom of 100 randoms. If there's a 4-star rating on this particular place, now, that doesn't mean that someone who cares about it as much as I do and who has the same criteria as I do, because we eat this cuisine regularly, it doesn't mean that they also would consider that restaurant the best one in this area, okay? You can't always purely trust that the law of averages will work out to bring the best ones to the top on these kind of sites. Anyway, the same goes for the newspaper. Let's say this columnist from a local newspaper or a big Australian newspaper went to this place and raved about it. And he thought it was great. Well, that's cool. But again, I don't know very much about him. I don't know his expertise. I don't know how much he cares about Chinese restaurants. And I also don't know whether he's really tried all of them in the area and he's calling this one the best. That article is there because it's published on this big newspaper's authoritative website. Okay, so the problem here is hopefully clear by now. There's things that are called authority and they're judged as authority by search engines without having the aspects of authority that human-to-human contact might require. Does that make sense? So I hope it will be perfectly clear if I present you the alternative, which is what I call a niche authority. The alternative to this is, let me just click a button here. The alternative is a niche authority. It's an independent subject matter expert. Okay, so it's a person with a site who, they're not tied to a newspaper, they're not tied to TripAdvisor, they're certainly not tied to any of the restaurants themselves, so they don't have that kind of bias. It's just a person who really likes Chinese food, maybe really likes food period, and eats at a lot of restaurants, let's say. And they can provide an experience-based critique of the thing that I am looking for. They can give a verdict on what the best one is based on a lot of information and based on their critical eye for this particular thing. It's like a guru, right? And we kind of all, like, whenever we're making a decision about something, particularly a decision that's important where we're about to spend a lot of money, it's one thing if we're going to buy a new mop. Fine, I'll trust the Amazon star ratings. 100 people have reviewed it. It's just a mop. How bad can it be, even if it goes wrong, right? If you're going to spend even a little bit of money on something, it's a different story. I want to know that that investment will be well rewarded, and the best way to do that is by having someone who has also made that investment but has made a lot of similar investments too and has the capacity to compare them to tell me that that's going to be the best investment, okay? So the thing about... There's four principles I'm going to tell you that I think a niche authority needs and that they have, that they exhibit, that those big quote-unquote authority sites, according to Google, don't have. We're going to come to them in a second, but there's a couple more things that you need to understand that a niche authority is. A niche authority is a filter. And the reason this is important is if I go onto TripAdvisor and I'm looking at the listing of best Chinese restaurants in my area, there's a lot of restaurants, okay? There might be, let's say there's 10 Chinese restaurants in this area. I need to get a sense of which one is the best. But there's no direction. There's a ranking, but that's the only metric for separating one from the other. There's no nuance to that. Like, let's say if you're really into this particular dish, this restaurant does it better than this one. But if you don't care about that so much, on balance, probably all the factors are equal across this other one, right? It's kind of trivial using the restaurant example here. I probably would have picked a different one if I had the time again, but this is even more visible when the item is more expensive and more technical. So let's say you're going to buy a vacuum cleaner. all these variables like how big your house is, what surface you'll be using it on, how long you'll be using it for, how far you need to be able to stretch a power cord, and whatever else. There's so many variables to consider, and having someone who can separate out and say, like, if you have this set of variables, then this is the best decision, but if this other set of variables, then this is the best decision. That kind of comparison and context is what a niche authority is better placed to provide you, because 100 reviews just averaging out the highest number, it's very difficult for it to tell you that, or you have to go digging and actually reading all the people's reviews if you want to ascertain that, which is a huge pain none of us want to do. So a niche authority is a filter. It's someone who can say, of all the information that there is on this topic, here is what you actually have to consider, and here's what you don't have to worry about. So for example, on the vacuum cleaner situation, someone, you might be looking at a comparison table on one of these bigger authority sites, and you see that, oh, this one has the same amount of power as this other one. This one has more power than this other one, but it's cheaper. So that looks like a really good deal. But someone with the firsthand experience and the subject matter knowledge can say to you, look, the extra 100 watts of power is actually not going to make a difference unless you're doing this kind of vacuuming. So then you can discard that bit of knowledge. You can discard the fact that this wattage is higher. That kind of filtering is what a niche authority can do really well. And that requires that sort of high level experience and knowledge and or research, which we're going to talk about shortly. Third thing, a niche authority, they may not have the highest domain authority because they'll usually have built this thing up themselves. They're not going to have the domain authority of a newspaper or of TripAdvisor, but they should have the most trust. If you can't trust the TripAdvisor random person who's been to this restaurant, even if you read 10 of them in a row, you should be able to trust this person who can make the most in-depth comparisons between the products across a category, okay? So even where domain authority is not as high, trust should be higher. And trust almost always is when it's a good, high-quality niche authority. Last thing before we continue, this kind of niche authority will not generally, in fact, almost always, not cover as broad a set of topics, and they won't make as many recommendations, but that will help the trust be higher overall. So, for example, this person, if you're obsessed with, let's say, Chinese restaurants in Melbourne, there will be a ton of them that you will not have tried. There'll be a ton of them that you will not have tried, but you will know from your information, from, let's say, knowing chefs in the industry or from having researched it so heavily and tried so many different ones and talked to so many people who have the same interest, you will know that there's a huge number of them that you never have to have been to. You don't have to review. It comes back to that filtering thing. The comparison is with TripAdvisor. If there's 10 restaurants in the area and they all have a 5-star rating, well, how do you pick between them? Or if they all have a 4, how do you pick between them? The person, the authority will have reviewed less, but they will have focused more attention on the highest quality ones. And this is good for us because if you're creating this content, it means you don't have to create as much. It means the quality is higher than the quantity, okay? And also the trust is much higher, all right? They'll also make a lot of, let me say that bit later. So before I tell you about these four things that I think comprise a niche authority kind of a site, I hope you've got a sense of what this kind of site is now, usually run by one person or a small team, but as they get bigger, they can be much bigger businesses and bigger companies, and I'll show you an example of one of them in a second. But before we talk more in detail about the sites and what comprises them and how to develop them, I want to talk to you about why I think this is smart business, why I think this will be more profitable rather than less in the future. So the problem that I described of not feeling enough trust for those big authority sites, I just get this feeling that with Google having so much effort, having so many resources to commit to the problem of working out what is authoritative and what's not, they will get better in the future. It's almost inevitable. It's their biggest product, their main product, their most important product. If they don't get better at this, there's a risk of them losing losing people who are looking for information to other sources of authority, other mediums that help people ascertain authority, like social media, for example. So if I can come to a search result and look at 10 results and see that none of them is, without even clicking, I can see just by knowing these sites that none of them have what I'm looking for, Google will surely work this out in the end as well. If I, as a human looking for a bit of information, can set down a better criteria for what authoritative would look like than the algorithm can, that's a gap you can expect to slowly, of course, but be bridged in time. If I know, for example, that this one guru of Chinese restaurants is going to give me better, higher quality information than TripAdvisor is, it can't be that long before Google works that out as well, all right? So and that's without even going into things like a personalized search, which is where I can imagine a situation, and it's nothing to imagine, it already happens. But if I've got subject matter gurus that I am involved with and that I follow online, let's say I follow them on Facebook or I found myself on their sites before, personalized search will make it so that in the future, as that expert, niche authority covers more things in their area, when I'm searching for an area without knowing that they've written about it, Google will bring that person's website closer to the top because they know that I'm already connected to them. They know that I've visited their site before, and you see this in the SERPs already. But that's another thing that will push in favor of niche authorities, especially when in situations where if it's a hobby or an interest of yours, and you've spent a lot of time on this niche authority site in the past, it's just easy for Google to show you that again. It's a better bet for them. It's a better bet for them to have provided you with a higher quality result because they have that data. They know that you like that site and so on. Anyway, so there's that. The second thing is this kind of site should convert better. It should convert better and it should make money with less traffic. So if you're a site owner, when you have people who really care and they really value what your site's opinion is, that is influence. That's where you don't have to, like, on a first visit to a site, when you found a site in the search engines, when you were looking for some information, the site has to do these things to convince you of its credibility. That's why people do the these like social proof points where they say that I've been listed on CNN and whatever else. They have to use a certain tone. They have to say a certain kind of a thing. There's all this work that has to be done to establish credibility, to make them realize that, yes, you've just found me. I've never helped you in any way before, but I am really credible on this subject and you should listen to my recommendation. A niche authority can overcome that problem because, for one, so much of the traffic can be return traffic in time, but also the authority is already there. This person is an expert that's been recognized by other experts in this field. They've been mentioned, they've been published in these, whether it's news sites, bigger publications, we'll talk about that later. But there's this aspect where the trust and the credibility is already there. It doesn't have to be reestablished every time. And there's a lot of money in that. It's the kind of thing where you can make so many less recommendations, that is, have less pieces of content and everything, but still make more sales because the conversion's higher, because you have that trust, that authority, and that credibility with the audience. And what this means is it's just a great business model for people like us who don't want to grow enormous companies necessarily. They want to be able to make the most of the effort or of the work that they can get done with just them and perhaps a small team, that is, in terms of content creation and promotion and other. So the third thing is, I love this business model because the monetization is so very flexible. This is not just an affiliate business. It's not just an ad business. When you have this incredible content and you have that high level of trust and authority, you can take it in so many different directions. And you're going to see that in the examples that I give you in a second. I'm going to also talk to you about some unique kinds of monetization that these sites have tried that you might not have thought of before. But basically, when you have people's ear in that way, when these authorities get to a certain place in their market, they get to a certain relationship with their followers, they can recommend products to do to monetize as an affiliate. They can run advertising if that if that's suitable, they can go on to develop products of their own. That, and there's other options that we're going to talk about. But the point is that the currency really is the trust and authority. Once that's there, it can be moved in so many different directions. It's not like starting a product-based business where the product has a life cycle, and after a period of time, the product won't sell as well as it previously did. You have to think up another product and so on. The trust and the authority, as long as you keep the relationship current and active with the audience, a relationship doesn't have a life cycle unless this kind of relationship, no relationship should have a life cycle in that way. It's not going to die unless you do something really bad to sort of ruin it. So you can, there can be a sort of journey that you and the followers go on where that can include many kinds of monetization over a longer period of time. And that flexibility is really an asset in a business sense, because it doesn't tie you to anything. It doesn't matter if one product you're recommending is important now, but something changes and that goes away in the future. You still have the audience and the platform. You can change your recommendation and have and move people with it. Or it doesn't matter if an affiliate account dies at some point. That doesn't lose you all the people and all the trust that you've built up. That thing is still there. And in a way, that trust and authority is really, really hard to take off you, because it doesn't, like, at the higher levels of trust, people follow you across platforms. If you move, if you stop emailing them but start publishing content on Instagram or something else, when the people really like you, or like you, like your brand, I should say, like the content, like what you do, there is that ability to have them follow you across platforms so that you're never fully tied down. So I see there as being a lot of flexibility in this business model. I think that's a really good thing, for especially for online entrepreneurs, when we're in this environment where things do change so regularly. The last thing, actually, there's two more things here of why I think this is a smart business. The traffic is also flexible, and that's intimately tied to what I just said. In this process of transitioning people across platforms, you can also transition your forms of traffic, okay? And you can build up multiple platforms here, or you can build up your platform, which is to say your brand, but across multiple platforms. When you're an authority figure in your market, you have that kind of firsthand perspective. There's the potential, like, you can start, as we will discuss, with search, just building up content on your blog or wherever else. But it's such an easy transition from there to providing content on social media, building up a following there, because again, that currency is trust rather than strict, like, informational interest kind of stuff. There's just more options for how to attract people in a market. Even though each market will have its own ones that work better and worse, there's always multiple options. It's not just an SEO play. It's not just a paid traffic play. There's the traffic has that flexibility, as does the monetization. So the last thing that I really love about this kind of business model is that it has the potential to sell things to the customer that they didn't even search for. So with a direct SEO play, it's like you're selling the things that the person looked for. They found you because they were looking for the best toaster ovens in the niche. Now you get a chance to recommend them a toaster oven. But after that, they're sort of gone if you have nothing else. But in a market where, let's say, coffee is a good one. So if a guy's got a niche authority side and recommends me a really good coffee machine, and he's talking about the coffee machine and he mentions this this interesting kind of bean that he uses, because I know and trust him and I realize that he's really smart on this subject, I'm suddenly curious about what coffee beans that he has. Where is he sourcing them from? Like, how can I get some of those? Because that relationship's already there, it's easy for him to transition and sell and recommend other things. And this kind of comes back to the flexibility of monetization too. But that option is not there with a direct SEO kind of affiliate business, but it is there with an authority. You have the ability to move your followers and your audience in lots of different directions. So that's the end of why I think it's a smart business. There's other things we can talk about there too, but if that doesn't convince you, you probably don't want to do niche authority sites anymore. So you can hit stop. So let me talk about what a niche authority requires. Okay. This is like, if you are wanting to integrate some of this into your own sites, if you've got an existing site, you want it to be more of a niche authority site, or if you don't have any of these kind of sites or businesses, you want to start some, here's where I think here's what I think is the core of it, okay? And all of these points are things to do with content and, to an extent, monetization. So the first thing that these authority sites have invariably is firsthand experience. So this is a funny one in a way, because I came from that world of affiliate marketing where you could try, because it was easier, to write, let's say, product reviews or product comparisons without having used the product yourself, without having without firsthand experience. And that still is very much possible. And I even still do that now. That's still possible and it's still effective, provided that the research is really, really strong and the content is of a very high quality. Just because it's possible, though, doesn't mean it's the best you can do. And a niche authority is one that sets the bar for that kind of content even higher. It's where first-hand experience is basically inseparable from the site. What I imagine, it's easier for a lot of us to imagine going to a place where you don't start out necessarily with this kind of content, because it is more expensive, it's harder to acquire, etc. But you work on moving towards this on your site. So once you might start a site, for example, with those product reviews that are fine, really good quality, but they lack that firsthand experience. Once the site is up and established, you improve it. You improve the content by, let's say, purchasing the expensive product that you review. And even if you don't want to purchase it yourself, there's so many ways that you can leverage the experience of people who already have, whether it's interviews, whether it's like whether it's having the people who have purchased that actually contribute to your article, paying them, like finding these people, etc. But the point is, firsthand experience cannot be absent from this kind of site. The firsthand experience is when you're reading an article, it's the thing that makes you know that this person is really worth listening to. It's the way it comes through very quickly in the way that they talk about the products. So the second one is context and comparison. So the huge thing, the big thing that a niche authority is able to do that other sites are not, is provide context and give comparisons. They won't just say to you that this is a good product, these are its good features. They can say to you, this feature of this toaster oven is really helpful, but it doesn't matter so much compared to this thing. This part of it is what will really make the difference in the quality of the stuff that comes out of your toaster oven. So even though this other product has this particular thing, which seems like it's great, don't worry about that. Like, bet on this particular feature. Okay, that's comparison. And context is similar. It's where they can just point you in the direction of what is really important and what isn't in this set of features, set of benefits, whatever it is. And also, I've talked about this before, context is the discussion of not only what the features are, why it's good to have this product, but what difference that makes in your life. So it's where they can say, and it comes back to firsthand experience, the fact that there's a preset on this piece of cookware, this stove item, whatever it is, the fact that there's a preset means that while you're making this particular dish or while you're doing this kind of cooking, you can have it there and you can be doing this other thing that you will need to do, like with specific detail. So they can speak to what your life will be like if you have that product. And that level of context is really hard to get from just, it's really hard to get without firsthand experience, but it's very, very valuable. Third thing is passion. Passion is such an important thing for the quality of a content, because for multiple reasons. Passion is motivating. So passion has this conversion improving effect, where when a person can talk about this product or this thing because they have such a deep love of it, that love, that the strong feelings they have for it are infectious. They pass on to the people who's reading about it, and they can be used to, or they can elevate the passion of the person who comes to the site. The person might have been sort of interested in getting a toaster oven, but when you hear how excited this person is about it, how cool it's been for them, all the changes it's made to their life, you're more likely to want to buy it. So conversion wise, it's important, but also just engagement wise. It's just like, all of us love to listen to somebody who is really passionate and excited about their subject matter, about the thing that's really interesting to them. And especially on the internet, where there's this kind of attention economy, there's like the feeling buttons being pushed in or like or constantly like this cute cat's over here and this terrible tragedy that happened in this news article over here. There's like so much emotive content. Having something that's really, really dry and dull and like fact-based and without feelings is just a harder thing. It's a harder thing to bring people to. It's a harder thing to have them engage with once they are there. Content without passion is just not as good. It's fairly uncontroversial. The last thing is integrity. So integrity is that the niche authority site owner will not make every recommendation. They won't. They'll turn people away from products a lot, which comes from their passion and their concern for it. They are not willing to want to pass on information or an experience or a product that doesn't meet their extremely high standards, because they know what's on the line emotionally because they care about it so much. So integrity is less recommendations but higher quality recommendations, and keeping that standard of, or that high standard, consistently across the all of the content and across the life of the site. I think if you can nail down those four things, you're on the path to developing one of these niche authorities. So let me give you some examples next. These are three niche authorities in my own life, and judge me how you will for the subject matter. I'm fully open to that. That's fine. But what you should get from these is three really different examples of what a niche authority can look like. Hopefully some ideas about how a niche authority might work in a niche that you are in currently, and just a kind of broad picture of, if you're looking at moving in this direction, what's a spectrum of how this might look. So the first one is called Serious Eats. Serious Eats is just a food cooking site. It's really big now. You probably, if you do any cooking, looking at recipes online, anything to do with food, you've probably come across it before. Serious Eats is different to the other ones I'm going to talk to you about because it is a multi-author site. But what's cool about it is that it's built up this authority and reputation as being so, as having so much of those four things that I just told you about, without needing one individual face. It's a good model for people who think they might want to build up a niche authority site of their own, but they know they're not going to be the one who is the expert. They're going to have to find experts or bring groups of experts together to contribute the content and have the authority be a brand rather than a person's face. So what's cool about Serious Eats is just the quality of the content is incredible. If they're giving a recipe for a dinner, it's someone who, reading the content, you can just see that there's an example I'm thinking of, which is this Mexican hot chocolate thing that I was looking up. Why? I can't even get into the story. But there was a person who'd lived in Mexico and they had drank these things while they were there, and they were really wanting to find one again, and they couldn't find one, so they had to piece together how to make it themselves, and they had to talk to some people from the place where they'd had it. And anyway, there was this whole passionate journey that had gone into them developing this recipe for this thing that they used to get but couldn't any longer. And the passion was there, the first-hand experience was there, all of the detail was there, which I suppose is just first-hand experience, but they tried it multiple different ways, and so they have come to the conclusion that this one's better than this one, and it's all of those little kinds of things that make that really incredible content, that really trustworthy content, where you're just reading that and you can compare that to some other recipe that you pluck up as the first one that comes up on, I don't know, Jamie Oliver or whatever, and you can just know that the quality is different there. It's just engaging on a totally different level. So Serious Eats, yeah, heaps of content that's really all just like that. Interestingly, they have, or the monetization is pretty much just banner advertising, and they may do some other things as well, I assume. I would be surprised if they didn't have like their own cookbooks and stuff like that. But they have more options for monetization that I'm sure they'll explore in the future. Last thing that I found was interesting on Serious Eats was the thing that they advertised was the number. I happened to bring up the number of editors they have. There's something like 9 or 10 editors, 9 people just editing content that goes onto the site, not creating it, just checking that it's a high enough standard. And that told me something about where their bar is for quality. Okay. So that's an interesting one to check out. You'll really like Serious Eats, and I'll bet you end up making something, or wanting at least to make something that you find on there. The second one is a totally different kind of example, because it's one person that runs the whole site. They may have someone who helps them answer emails or whatever, but this one person, let me tell you the domain. So this one is in the category of menswear. It's permanentstyle.com. It's this British guy it's just a blog, a British guy who started a blog some number of years ago. Apparently, according to what he says on the site now gets 200,000 uniques a month, which is a pretty big deal. It could have been page views, but regardless, it's a lot of traffic for a one-man band. This guy's just positioned himself as an authority in this market, and he really is just an authority for this group of people. It started in the beginning, no monetization. It was just a guy writing about this stuff, writing about tailored clothing, about how men can dress better, stuff like this. And no monetization in the beginning. Ended up doing like reviewing some products and some shops for people, I think making a bit of money that way. Ended up writing books after the audience had developed sufficiently. And has more recently done really interesting things with the monetization. And this speaks to that flexibility of monetization that I was talking about earlier. Has done interesting things where, because he now has a following and an audience, he's partnered with product creators to make branded clothing of his own. So without having to do any of the work of creating a product himself, he's got a product, which is his own product, his own brand. I thought that was really cool. That's just come from him being a blogger. To even more recently, he had a physical shop, like a pop-up shop in London. Like, he's got a big enough audience that he could sort of make that happen. He had the relationships with people in the market to be able to make that work. But it speaks perfectly to the point about flexibility of monetization. He had a lot of options for ways that he could generate revenue from this, and he's kind of, it's a passion for him, and he's just kind of exploring them sequentially, it appears. And this is something I think, if you're strategic about it, any of us can do, really. There's nothing special. Like, he really was involved in the topic. He obviously had that firsthand experience. But past that, there's a lot of things that we, for example, would have as marketers that he didn't have. So I think what he's achieved with this is really achievable in the broader sense. What else to say about that? Yeah, nothing really. You can just have a look at permanentstyle.com. It's just an interesting, you'll get bored, I'm sure, by the content, but you'll find it interesting to have a look at. For example, he really deeply engages with the audience. He's that kind of blogger who replies to every comment that he gets, most of the comments that he gets from people. It's constantly just sharing firsthand experience. He talks about the ways talking about the integrity point, there's a lot of things he doesn't review. He doesn't, like he says, a lot of people contact him to say, hey, I've got this shirt, would you do a review of this shirt? And if he doesn't like it, or he basically doesn't accept money to write reviews for people. He only does them if he uses them, or if he's got a relationship with the people involved, etc. So keeping the integrity high. There's some other interesting things about that one too, but it's once again, good example of just one man band building up a site with tons of options for monetizing, and who's developed it into something. It's really a whole life for him. It's a great business and a really cool setup. Third one, different again, coming back to food, I guess drink more really, but this one's a cocktail site. It's called diffordsguide.com, diffordsguide.com. This one is just cocktail recipes, cocktail how-to stuff. You'll pretty quickly get a sense of what it is. But the reason this is a niche authority is because it's one guy who is a bartender who started it at some point, I think a long time ago. This one's pretty old. And he's now built up this site, which is actually a bit of a clunky site at different times. While the quality of the information is high, it's so high that it overcomes other problems with the site. The fact that it's not the most high tech, it's not the most expensive website that anyone's ever made. But the four things that I talked about, the first-hand experience, the context, the integrity, and the passion, are just there in spades. So the example is, I was looking at, this is the kind of site where every time I see a cocktail or I hear an idea about a cocktail, I'll Google the cocktail name with this guy's with this guy's name in front. So the other weekend we were making this cocktail, it's called a Hanky Panky. And the first thing I wanted to know is, how does Simon Difford make a Hanky Panky? I Googled Difford's Hanky Panky, because of all the people who will have tried it and written a recipe list, I just trust that this guy will have a better version or a really good version. And at least he'll be the best place to start. And exactly as hoped, the recipe went something like, where he said, my version of this cocktail, I added in a tiny little bit of orange juice because I thought it helped balance out the bitterness of this other ingredient that was in there, right? And that is firsthand experience to a T. And it's so passionate too, where like this recipe is an old one. It still is a lovely drink just to serve it up as it is, but this is a person who cared so much about this and was so passionate about improving it, making it better, that they tested different things and came up with this improvement. Like, it's just such a great kind of a content. That's the kind of thing that helps build trust. That's the kind of thing that makes people love you. That's why I love this guy and this site. So monetization wise, they sell bartending equipment, I think. They have like a paid membership area, which I think is for industry people to get... Well, it's a locked door. It's a paywall thing, so I have no idea what they have behind there. But it's a membership kind of product, as I understand. So they've done the multiple kinds of monetization thing. There's ads in some places on the site, and there's a huge amount of content. But this is an interesting one where the guy, I'm sure, started himself, but there's no way he's still running and maintaining the site now. I think he's still an active bartender at some place in London. So it's a good one to think about, where you start a site and build it up and it still continues under your name or your brand's name, but you are not involved in it in the same capacity at some point in the future. There's a handful of things you'll find interesting, especially if you like cocktails, when you're looking at that site. But that is the third example of this kind of niche authority that's integrating those four things and that has done that really successfully. So two more things I want to talk to you about on this episode. I wanted to give you an idea here. I keep talking about this thing about flexible monetization. So I wanted to give you three ideas here for ways of monetizing this kind of site that you might not have thought about before. These are interesting kind of new ones, at least still new to me. I've been wanting to explore them further since I've heard about them. I thought I'd just pass them on to you as soon as I could. And then lastly, we're going to talk about a bit more of the how-to of building up this kind of a site. So interesting monetization methods. Yes, you've got affiliate marketing. Yes, you've got running banner ads. Yes, you've got, you know that eventually you can create your own products, but there is just so much more than that for this kind of niche authority to consider. So that example with the clothing guy who partnered with a product creator, that I think is a fascinating one, one that has so many applications, something that's really interesting to explore. So every niche has product creators, and a lot of product creators, especially the kind that are of interest to the people who follow niche authorities, people who are also very passionate about their hobby, their interest, whatever, these product creators who are small, they do really good work, but they have focused so much attention on making incredible products that they haven't necessarily got the best marketing. The ability for authorities to do those kind of partnerships where they basically help marketing for an existing product or a product that they want to develop is, I think, just very smart and very exciting as a possibility. What that guy did, the first one, he might have done one before this, but he made this shirt basically where he liked this particular polo shirt and he liked it exactly in a certain way, but there was no one else making that sort of a thing. And he had the market intel because of the fact that when he talked about this kind of shirt that he liked and how difficult it was to find it, I realize I'm sounding like such a nerd here. It's weird, but let's just go with it. He talked to his audience about this and he realized that there was an interest where other people had also wanted to find a polo shirt that had exactly these characteristics, but they couldn't find it either. So he sort of had that market data. Then he could go to a product creator and say, look, I've got an audience and I know that they want this particular thing. If you can make that shirt exactly like that, we all make money. That is that's a broad example of what I think could be done in so many different markets right now, because you're the one with the authority and the trust and you're having these consistent conversations with people who want certain things. There's a lot that you can provide to a product creator, all the way from data to marketing. I think that's very exciting. Second one, there's all kinds of new ways of springing up where content creators, like niche authorities, can get paid by people who follow them. I've only just started becoming interested in this one, some of you will know it already, called Patreon. It's basically exactly what I said, where people with podcasts, people with blogs, people creating content of all kinds can have a group of people, the group of people that follow them, support them financially in a variety of ways. But there's people now who are monetizing the content they have almost solely with this, where they've got this subscriber base who is essentially donating to them to help them develop this site, to help them continue doing what they do with this site. And for certain niches and certain authorities, it's a really interesting option to look at. It's especially cool because, well, depending on how you structure it, it's not necessarily tied to you producing any particular product. It's not tied to people clicking on ads. It's just you're producing this really high quality content that has all these properties we're talking about. There's people who want it so much that they're willing to pay for it. A really great example of this, to talk about authorities, another site you might have heard of is called brainpickings.com. I think I've even mentioned it before in my emails to people. Brain Pickings, just a lovely, beautiful site that's it's all about books and art and culture of various kinds, all stuff that doesn't monetize very easily. Like the girl who runs it's called Maria. She's always monetizing by recommending books, and I've no doubt they make money on Amazon. But one of the primary things is she just has, like, if you like this, donate. Like, here, you can donate $3 a month here, $7 a month here, or whatever. And it's a legitimate, I'm guessing by now, the site's big, been around for a while, of a huge form of support for the site. And it's meant that they don't have to develop products of their own. They don't have to run ads that their audience isn't going to like, and so on. It's for certain sites, certain niches, it's a really interesting option to consider. Last one is called, broadly called, content licensing. I met a lady at a marketing event recently who was telling me about some fascinating deals that she had done licensing content of theirs to other companies. So this is a person with a content platform of their own, like a big site. I think she said their site had something like 50,000 pages. It was a big authority in a big, broad sort of niche. And basically, they'd had companies, and she did a lot of networking to achieve some of these deals. They don't just come out of nowhere. But companies had come to her and said, look, we really want access to this group of people who is in your audience, but our website, our platform online just isn't very strong. This example was companies that had strong offline marketing, older companies, but their online wasn't up to par. It wasn't something they put a lot of focus in yet, but they wanted to access those people and they wanted to quickly develop their own platforms online. So they said they've come to this website, this lady's website, and said, look, we would really like some content like that. Is there any way that we can license that from you? And this lady was basically repurposing that content, recreating it with a focus toward that brand and selling it to them. And she'd done these incredible deals. There was multiple different ones that they'd done where it was like she would reproduce an article or a series of articles and this company would pay on an ongoing basis to access them, and the content would still be branded to them. Like, it would say that they wrote it on their site so they could cross promote. There was one really good example where it was something like, I'm going to get the details wrong, but broadly this was about right, where she'd licensed something like 12 articles maybe to this company, and she had to, in the contract, she had to update the articles in time if anything changed, and there was some other features. But she basically took us something like $3,000 or $4,000 a month just for them to be able to use that content, just to license that content. It was created, they had to create it fresh, so it was work for them. It wasn't just for nothing. They had to create it fresh, but the idea and the core of it was all already there. They recreated it, repurposed it, adapted it for this site, and got an ongoing contract to keep providing it to this website with their own branding on it. Like, anyway, the reason I'm saying this, even with such slim detail, is that this kind of arrangement, there is an almost unlimited number of arrangements where you can monetize with this sort of licensing thing content that you have to other people, other companies. If you are curious, like if you're interested and if you're out there meeting people and looking for this kind of thing, there's a huge number of possibilities. And again, very exciting to me. Okay. I put that in there, so I hope it gets you thinking a little bit about some forms of monetizing that you maybe hadn't considered. So last thing, let's talk about how to build this kind of niche authority, right? This is a huge conversation and in a way silly to tack on the end of a already long podcast episode, but I wanted to give you some sense of how, if you want to move in this direction and have sites that are more like this, how that can be accomplished. It's actually not super, it's not super difficult, which I also like as a business model. So content wise, it's value first. All right. If you're not yet out of the mindset, the old like internet marketery, affiliate marketery kind of mindset where you're just putting up whatever content can make money the fastest and easiest, yet it's probably time to get out of that now. So creating this kind of niche authority site is about creating value first. So it's about having a clear idea about where value can and should be given in your niche. Value that has nothing to do with product reviews or comparisons. They, of course, can be valuable, but they cannot be the primary value of a site like this, at least not for long. They are the thing that can get revenue off the ground for a site like this. They're the kind of thing that are easy enough to make money from, but they cannot be all of a niche authority site. There has to be more. So what is that value? The answer to that question is different from niche to niche, but it's rarely so difficult to work it out because you can look at other sites that are providing information in that niche and look at how people have responded to them, whether it's on their site, on social media or whatever, and you can have an idea, right? So, I don't know, example, on the cocktail site, the monetized part might be, let's say, like the best, he might be selling spirits or whatever, and it's like the best whiskeys under $100 or something like that. And maybe that post is monetized well, that's easy to make money on, but a lot of the content that the people really want is like how to use a whiskey to make this vintage kind of old-fashioned this cocktail, right? So there is some value there that won't be very easily monetized, at least not in the beginning, but you have to work out what that is because it's that high value content that will help build up your authority and trust with your audience. So the next, once you've got a sense of what value is, you try to, in all of your content, work in those four things that we talked about: the firsthand experience, context, passion, and integrity. Even if it's one at a time, even if it's one article at a time, moving in a direction where you're having more rather than less of that stuff in your content is going to help you become a niche authority. The third one is the secret, which is an unsecret, which is keep doing it. When you start to develop this kind of content, you just keep going. The biggest, most authoritative, most trustworthy sites of this kind are ones with lots of content, which cannot possibly come together in an instant. It slowly comes together with time, one piece at a time, especially once you start getting a sense of what your market is finding valuable. You keep doing it and you do more of it. You do as much of it as you can. You do a little bit every day, every week. The unsecret is consistency. This is not, partly that's why I like this business model, is it's not some hyper sexy kind of model. This is not the kind of model where you're going to make $1,000 in your first week and it's just going to grow wildly from that point on. This is the kind of thing that if you're smart, you can make money from it quickly, but it will grow slowly over time and the rewards will be exponential, where a lot of work in the beginning will be slow. It will be a slog. There will be no profit. You will not draw any revenue from the business, but within a year, within 2 years, within 3 years, you will see disproportionately high gains and things become disproportionately easy. Like, for example, the way that ranking an article for a keyword you're targeting is disproportionately easier having a domain authority 40 site than it is having a domain authority 10. That's some quick comments for me to give you on the content side of things, but there actually isn't much more to it than that. That's not accurate. Delete that statement. I'm not going to edit it out, but delete it from your mind. There's more to discuss, but that's a broad outline of how the content can look. Promotion is the second part. the two pillars of this business are content and promotion. So how are you going to promote this incredible content that you have and get it to reach as many people in this market as possible? Just a few things here that I want to draw your attention to rather than concrete strategies for like, here's how to go out and do it tomorrow. This is a business model that rewards promotion across multiple channels. So rarely can you build up this sort of authority with search alone. You can sort of do it with a blog on its own because a blog allows for conversation, more sort of interaction. A blog allows for more personal elements to be injected. So there's that relationship building aspect. But generally speaking, the business model will reward you building up the content on your own platform, that is your own blog, your own site. That content captures traffic from search and maybe some other channels, but you expand that by creating content for social, creating content for perhaps some other places too, because even when they're not better for selling, even when they're not making more money in the short term, those can be really strong relationship builders. All of the authorities that I think about, certainly the ones I mentioned before, they're all active across multiple channels. They're all building up the brand and building up that trust constantly. And then that's, let's say, more common on social. And then to leverage the trust to make recommendations, let's say, to monetize, that could be via email, that could be on the content on their site or elsewhere. But there is that spread, let's say, of where the content is produced and how it's leveraged. Quick note there, because from my audience, most of you guys who listen to this, you won't have heard me at least talk much about doing the social stuff in the past. When you do want to make that move from just having a blog, just doing search engine traffic to social, the easiest way to start is to look at people who are already doing well in social in your market and copying them. Basically, finding your own unique way to do something similar to what they're doing. That's to prevent you from starting a Facebook page and having no idea what to do. All right, that's the quickest quote unquote hack. Can't believe I said the word hack on this podcast. Punch me in the face next time you see me. Next thing, borrow authority. There's this ability, there's a way of building authority. In fact, it's almost always a part of the way that someone else has built trust and authority is that it's been borrowed, where they've got relationships with other people in the market, people who are already authoritative in the eyes of their target audience, and they've attached themselves to those people somehow, whether it's recommending their products, whether it's doing guest posts on their site, whether it's getting photos taken with them that get posted on Instagram. That transfer of authority is really common. You see this kind of everywhere, and it's a great tool, really, to be able to build your own authority when you're starting from scratch. So consider the ways that authority can be borrowed in your market. The other thing is that this model lends itself really strongly to networking. I'm talking about mainly in person, but online too. Meeting other people in the niche, especially the other influencers, the other authorities. Networking is easy to do, especially if you are the person with the experience or knowledge, because there's few better ways to start a relationship than with a mutual passion or an interest. If you are really into cocktails and so is this other person, it's easy to meet them. It's easy to talk, easy to strike up a relationship. And from there, lots of things can come. But just generally, I mean, whether it's for the sake of borrowing authority, whether it's for the sake of getting ideas for content, whether it's getting ideas for market intel, meeting other people in this market is strongly rewarded, I think, in this business model. Let me give you one last thing here in terms of the promotion, again, broad things to think about, but I think valuable. You want to expect, if you're doing this kind of site, that you will spend some time contributing content to a platform that's not your own, whether that's Facebook or some social media or some community. The way that I've seen a lot of people build up this kind of trust and authority and following is by, in the beginning, even solely creating content on some forum, for example. And once the members of that forum, or once among that members of that forum are a lot of people who will trust you, trust your brand, will grant you authority, then people start up their own sites, their own blogs, their own Instagram accounts, whatever it is, to leverage that trust and authority that they have built there. So it's just a worthwhile point to remember that when you are building authority and this trust, when you're trying to go in that direction, but you're going from scratch, it is often, rather than publishing an enormous amount of content on your own blog that goes out into a void because you've got a domain authority zero and a brand new website, it can just be so much easier to publish that content to on a platform where a group of people who are your target market will see it immediately. Obviously, the right ways to do that and how to combine that as part of a strategy with your blog, with the social media account and other things are hugely varying from one niche to another, but I just wanted to leave that thought in your heads because if it's not part of a strategy that you're using or that you might want to use, it's worth considering making it one. That's about all we have time to say in terms of like the steps to take or at least things to consider when trying to build this kind of a niche authority. But that will bring us to a close of this episode. So I hope, I suppose, that having listened this far, you've got a sense of what this kind of authority side is. I think you might agree by this point that that's a business model that's going to grow in the future. It's going to be ascendant in one way or another. And if you are thinking of going that direction, I hope this has given you some interesting ideas, some things to think about, ways you might want to go about that. Hope you found it valuable overall. I'll be back in touch again soon.